welcome once again to No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, Bob Page. Monday, April 1st, April Fool's Day, if you want to join us.
And the three fools are here.
That's right.
Boy, I was going to say, we got three fools right here, don't we?
You can email us at
one in particular we're going to get at momentarily. One of these three of us is a particular fool today, and we'll get to that momentarily.
Oh yeah, I think I know what that's going to be, right. Is it the same guy who was gloating about our bad prediction
Ridiculous
Brandon,
one? Go ahead.
Go
ahead,
play it, Brandon.
Let's go to the tape.
Let's go to the videotape. But I have a pronouncement to make. We should move on to another subject. This tournament's over with. Nobody can get that many good bounces and lose it from this point forward.
Well,
Duke is ordained as the winner.
Well, I really thought you were just reaching for something to say. I didn't think you really meant that. I thought you were just trying to be funny again.
Don't give him an out like that.
And not be funny, but whatever.
Don't give him that out.
You know, I figured the guy who was all everything for the last couple of years in the world of basketball, Zion, you know, I thought he would carry the ball.
He's only played at Duke for 1 year, Danny.
But he's been the last couple. Listen, he was all everything in Carolina, in the Carolinas. He was North Carolina, South Carolina. He was Illinois. He was Chicago. He was. I don't care where he went. He was it. And you know, he's Mr. Basketball. He, you know what? He was a star playing quarterback in high school.
Danny, I'm going to defend you. You know why I'm going to defend you? Because of Coach K, who has no pronunciation of K in his last name. It's Krzyzewski, but he's Coach K. Hadn't decided to ignore Zion Williamson for the last minute and a half and let R.J. Barrett carry the ball.
Why?
And why? Nobody can figure it out why. Because
no,
it was
no.
bad coaching.
Terrible.
To leave that kid, kid, not include him. In fact, on the last play Barrett made where he drove to the basket and Aaron Henry and Tillman converged on him and fouled him. Zion was trailing in the play. He could have passed it to him and he would have dunked it to tie the game. So Barrett blew it, and it was because Krzyzewski decided he'd be the guy that's going to win for him instead of the best player in college
and
basketball.
Zion
that
was standing
wasn't
there,
the way the play was
Zion
supposed to go.
Was standing there waiting for the ball. He came up to the line, came off the line, came back to the line, and went off the line twice in a row. Nobody gave him the ball.
And the previous play was set up to be a jumper from Barrett, and he missed that.
He missed that.
And
too.
then Barrett, a poor kid, he's a freshman. Listen, you got to take that into account that he's just a kid. Then at the free throw line, he misses the one he tries to make, and then he makes the one he tries to miss. He
bounces straight up and right on down.
So these things can happen. But Zion himself said after the game, quote, "I just couldn't get open. That's why it went to Barrett."
He was open.
Who about 4 months ago was going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft, not Zion Williamson. But if you look at Duke's losses during the regular season, he was 0-for-9 on attempted game-winning shots in those games. And what does that go to show, you guys? Other than Stevie Nash, Canadians got to stick to hockey. Canadians just got to stick to hockey.
Well,
like,
and you know, if you're gonna do voices, and I can't do his voice, but after the last Barrett screw up, Bill Raftery should have said, "Left a lot of lingerie on the floor." God, I hate that.
I don't understand.
I don't get
that
either. I think it means that, you know, that he left his jock on the floor or something. You know,
he works so hard to come up with a line all the time. I mean, he goes out of his way, and nothing ever sounds right. It sounds everything's produced. Everything.
You ever met Bill Raftery before?
One,
ever met?
Yeah,
him?
One time.
Okay. I worked, in the same market with Bill for a long time. Know him well. He's a great guy, but you see, that's his persona. That's how he gets over the congenial smile on an Irishman. And if the silly shtick he's doing on the air, and Nance again going off with Goins, over to Goins, you know, and Grant Hill, you can't, for the appearances of conflict of interest, and Grant was not, you know, guilty of this, he played it very straight, you can't have a Duke guy doing color commentary on Duke Michigan State, just as you couldn't have had Irvin Johnson or Greg Kelser or Scotty Skiles doing commentary on this game.
Well,
I don't like that.
Well, I know when I met him, I said, "Hey, how are you, Bill? Nice to meet you." He was stuck for an answer, so I didn't know where to go from there.
You know,
you talk, Eli, about the Zion Williamson not getting the ball. You look at the amazing defensive performance that was designed for this game by Kenny Goin.
Absolutely.
By Xavier Tillman.
Yeah.
By Nick Ward. I mean, and the kid still got, what did he get, like 28 points
24
and 14
points.
Rebounds or something
still
yesterday?
Got
that's
24,
how great he is. But State did a tremendous job on him nonetheless.
By the way, if Jim Nance pronounces it Goins, I got to believe that's the way it's supposed to be pronounced. Jim Nance.
And everybody all sees the long side goins. Every broadcaster in the Big Ten all sees
I will promise you, in this, I don't know it, I'm just guessing, that Jim Nance, because when he hears other people say goins, I bet he went to Goins himself or asked his mother, how do you pronounce the name? He wouldn't continually do it wrong when everybody else was doing it a different way. So I don't know the answer. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But ultimately, Goins or Goins, what a great performance. And that shot that he hit with 34 seconds left.
Absolutely.
And, Izzo drew up.
Open look. Goins hits it. What a play called by Tom Izzo in that timeout.
Izzo, in my view, outcoached the great Coach K, and that's what made the difference in that game.
And that was the great surprise in the game, how they gave it to him to make the shot with 35 seconds to go and not the big guy.
Tweet, timeout. So anyway, we see this article about what you guys are discussing in the Detroit papers this morning, and it was written by Sean Windsor, who I think is very good. I like Sean Windsor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he goes on talking about the play of Tom Izzo's life. The headlines says Tom Izzo called the play of his life. Well, you know what?
It was a second choice.
Those guys were under tremendous pressure there, all the writers, to get deadlines and everything like that. But the three of us and our producer, Brandon, we're all watching at home. They immediately interview Cassius Winston. They talked about that play, and Cash says, well, you know, the play was not designed to go to Kenny Goins.
Right.
Play was not designed to go. So let's not give Tom too much credit for the play of his life. And then Windsor goes on to write, says, this is as good an NCAA tournament game as you'll ever see. Sure. Well, you know what? It was the best NCAA tournament game that I've ever seen in my life after last Saturday night's game involving Purdue and Virginia.
I will agree. Virginia was a better – absolutely. In fact, I was rooting for Purdue so hard that Carson Edwards would be 6 to 8 feet. I go, no, Carson, amazing. No, that would go in. Oh, my God. No, don't you? Yes. No, yes.
Yeah, and the kid, the Hoosier Gunner from Virginia was tremendous, too. They were just raining threes and match back and forth like a heavyweight championship bout. That's one of the greatest NCAA games I've ever seen in my life.
And in this game, the game we're talking about, don't you think that their game plan originally was for MSU to come out and run like hell? Because I thought they had stepped up to a new tempo yesterday when the first game came out. I mean, you know, nobody was hitting a three. I mean, everybody was just running like hell, like they were either trying to leave or there was a fire express.
And to do their thing, Mike said after the game, this is the best guard we've played against all year long.
What's he supposed to say? What is he supposed to say? It was the worst?
You don't think?
No, but what is he supposed to say? Well, you're right. But wait a minute. What is he supposed to say?
He plays in the ACC.
He don't care if he plays in the GGG.
But it might have been true, Denny.
Point guards are in this country.
It could be true.
And he says Cassius was the best Duke's played against.
He said it.
Yeah, right. I mean, it could be. You're right. He's supposed to say it.
But my friend believes everything they say.
Also, Tony Benford, who's the interim coach at LSU, said after the LSU-Michigan State game, quote, we have never played a team this tough. And during that telecast, Grant Hill said, year in, year out, Michigan State rim runs as well as any team I have ever seen. And what does he mean by rim run? That means you go up, you get a block around the rim, you get a quick rebound, and zoom, man, you are down court.
Unbelievable.
And even the guy that doesn't have the ball blocks a shot and just races down court and is there in time for a tip in at the opposite end. This Michigan State team is so tough.
It's so obvious.
So it's, oh my God, they're unbelievable what they've done.
It's so obvious how they get down the court.
When they beat Michigan, we came to realize that they were that good, how strong they are. But here's the, and to defend Denny to a degree, because he made a silly prediction with Duke. Point is, we made even a worse prediction because we really thought, and I did, that losing Nick Ward when he broke his hand was going to be devastating. As it turns out, he's now the sixth man, technically, because Aaron Henry, the one who Izzo berated, what progress is that? And then the other kid, Gabe Brown, who didn't play much yesterday, but what an incredible freshman he's going to be. But Aaron Henry coming on as an untried freshman, amazing how he's filled in and actually moved Ward out of the starting lineup.
Right. If we had talked about the coming Michigan State basketball season last fall, who would we have said is the best player on Michigan State's team? If you follow Michigan State, you know the answer to that, Josh Langford. So Josh Langford was lost for the season, and then they lose Nick Ward. Mm-hmm. And they're down to Cassius Winston and essentially a bunch of other guys, cast-offs, role players, whatever you want to call it. And this is a team that beat Michigan three straight mm-hmm. times in the last 3 weeks of the season. This is, you know, Tom won the national championship, as everybody knows, in 2000. I don't know, and I don't care what's going to happen in the Final Four coming up this weekend. This, I think, is Tom Izzo's finest hour.
I do, too.
What he's done with this
team. And following the fortunes of this team has really been – it's just been a great ride. You know, somebody else we haven't mentioned, I didn't never thought that much, and not that I know state basketball that intimately, but Matt McQuaid seems to be a lot better than I thought he was.
Me too.
The improvement that Matt McQuaid and Kenny Gorenz have made – from last year to this year is nothing short of astounding, because 2 years ago and beyond that, we were all asking, how come these guys are in the program? I know Kenny Gorenz is a walk-on, for goodness sake. Matt McQuaid, his parents went to Michigan State, but he's from Texas. You go down to Texas and get a guy like Matt McQuaid, why are they in this program? Well, we see now.
I think most of us thought McQuaid just wasn't up to speed to be with this kind of a program. I never thought he was. I thought he was kind of a wuss to begin with.
I was looking for the one thing he did well. Maybe that would be a three-point shooter or something.
That's what they said, too.
And he didn't even do that well. So the guy, I went on the Carolina websites last night, the top paper in the state, the News and Observer. They've got a columnist there who asked the question in the wake of this game, can Duke and Kentucky continue to win with all of these freshmen and one-and-done 18-year-old players? Yeah. Now, you look at what happened yesterday. We're talking about Zion, and we're talking about Barrett and Cam Reddish, and we haven't mentioned Kenny Gorenz is a grown man.
Yep.
He's not an 18-year-old
kid. Fifth-year senior.
He's a master's student at Michigan State. He's already completed his undergraduate degree. So that's an excellent question and an excellent aspect to this whole situation here with McQuaid, with Kenny Gorenz. These guys are men.
And Tillman was, I think, Mr. Basketball a couple of years ago, but not really a very impressive freshman year.
No, Isaiah Livers actually won that. I don't think Tillman was Mr. Basketball from Michigan.
He was close to the top, then maybe finished second.
Yeah, he was. He sure was.
He has come along a lot in the last. It makes you realize how fast you can grow up.
Yeah.
Because they really are our children.
And the NCAA games, particularly these games, you see how much the game has become alive. I mean, we're talking about adults now. Mm-hmm. Now, the game has changed forever. A couple of reasons why. Number one, the kids are better athletes. Mm-hmm. They're bigger. They're quicker. They do all the things better than the last probably several decades. But more importantly, starting next year, you're going to see a bigger effect. This gambling thing is going to make a big difference. What's going to go on? You watch. There's going to be an offer. There's going to be a lot of new rules coming in next year.
Regarding what? Regarding kids, player behavior?
Especially the kids and their behavior. Watch. Yep. And I don't know what they are, but I'll tell you one thing will be, don't ever go to a casino.
I got no idea what you're talking about.
I don't really either.
I know. I'm talking about the world of gambling. You wouldn't understand. I mean, because you've got,
I probably
you've got the
I'm
same fish hooks.
I'm not a gambler at all.
You've got
you
the same fish hooks.
How is this going to change the game? How is this going to change college basketball?
How's it going to change the game?
You're going to have some rules that the three of us aren't even thinking about this morning.
Regarding what?
There's some pressure that's going to come from here, there, and everywhere regarding the gambling. They never wanted gambling in college basketball, for God's sakes.
Excuse me. Are you saying that instead of you explaining it, I'll ask you questions to try and figure out what it is you're trying to say. Are you saying that the players need to be guarded more carefully so they don't fall prey to gamblers?
That's number 1 through 10, yes.
Okay. Anyway, by the way, in the other game, the Kentucky-Auburn game, I was trying to figure out which coach to dislike more. Bruce Pearl, who was suspended years ago for lying to the NCAA, or Coach Calipari, who started this whole one-and-done thing to a very arrogant degree in Kentucky and really kind of changed
the
face of
the guy you mentioned?
Bruce Pearl.
What's the matter with him? Is he sick?
Why?
He's jumping all over the place. I mean, I don't get it.
They all are at this stage of the game. Now, you mentioned other NCAA games, and let's talk for a second about Michigan State's upcoming opponent, Texas Tech.
Yes.
Texas Tech knocked out my favorite whipping boys in all of college basketball. Again, you tell me that when you're playing in the bleeping Mountain West or the West Coast Conference, and you're going 30-3 playing a bunch of second-rate opposition that you deserve to be, as Gonzaga was and almost always is, a number one seed. What a bunch of poseurs. What a bunch of fun. The program's good and the team's good, but give me a break.
What
Gonzaga.
Do they?
Bye,
what,
Gonzaga. See you next year.
What does the NCAA know that you don't? That's what I'd like to know.
The NCAA tournament selection committee you're talking
what
about?
What do they know that they don't?
They looked at the fact that Gonzaga did beat Duke this year. They did beat Duke.
Apparently.
They played a couple other big-time teams, and they lost. They finished 30-3, won their conference, but didn't even win their conference tournament. And so they look at their record and they think, well, these guys must be real good. All I'm saying is, in the end, Denny, who was right, them or me?
Guys,
and a lot
who,
of people don't think Gonzaga.
Let me say this. Guys who win 30 are normally pretty good.
Well, it depends where you're playing.
Okay.
There we
30.
Go. Very good. Meanwhile, when Michigan was getting their asses kicked by Texas Tech, and they're getting pushed around, I looked at Texas Tech and said, "This is a team Michigan State should have been playing instead, because Michigan State would be able to muscle up with them and beat Texas Tech, and Michigan had no shot at all." So last night, while the Michigan State,
I want to say one more thing. Well, because nobody's talked about this. Nobody's talking about this, but I want to talk about it for just a minute. Can you imagine this Michigan State team, what they've done this year, going to the Final Four? Can you imagine if they had, as they should have had, Miles Bridges and Jaren Jackson?
Well, you can't do that. You just can't.
But here's the thing.
Yes, you're right.
These kids take the money. They jump to the NBA. Jaren Jackson just ruled out for the rest of the season by Memphis. He's at least played a lot this year. He scored 13 points a game and got about 5 rebounds. Memphis is 36-41, going nowhere. Meanwhile, Charlotte, Miles Bridges' team, is 36-41, going nowhere. He's only averaging 8 points a game and not even playing that much. You want to go to those kids and say, gee, fellas, are you a little sorry about what you're missing now?
Well, I think when he shows you his $3 million bank account.
$5 million. They're making $5 million this year.
As rookies? Okay. I didn't know first rounders got
Jaren
that
Jackson
much.
Is
I didn't know they got that
$5
much.
Million in the first round.
I didn't think they got that much. I thought it was, maybe it's up to that. Yeah, it used to be.
I saw it on the line somewhere. Yeah. He's making $5
million. Used to be $12 million for three. I get that. Anyway, last night while the game was going on, I, of course, was in the bubble. I didn't see the thrilling conclusion until about 11 o'clock when I watched it. Took me an hour and 15 minutes to watch the entire state game instead of 3 hours, which would have been seeing it live. But I was down at
You get it now, then. You get what I've been telling you, finally.
Well, I've been in the bubble for a long time.
I record every game.
I just couldn't. When four different networks going on, I felt it was just too difficult to do it the other day. But, I'm usually the I was down at the DIA where Ethan Davidson had produced a one-and-a-half-hour documentary movie on his dad, Bill Davidson.
What was it about?
It was about Bill Davidson, and I'm standing around there with Johnny Giannopoulos and the James Edwards and the Kelser and the various usual suspects, and I go, how could this possibly be interesting? Bill Davidson was not a very interesting man. He was brilliant, great businessman, but a quiet guy, and it was okay. There were some interesting aspects. We did a very nice job dealing with the basketball. In fact, I was in it. They showed me at Channel 2 throwing it to Fred McLeod on the floor after they beat, I guess, was whoever they won the Eastern Conference Finals, I guess, against the Celtics in 88 to make it to the finals.
Have you got a royalty check coming?
No, but I sure looked better. It's 40 years ago when I was 30 years ago when I was 38 years old. But, Ethan's a different kind of guy, and I'm thinking, who else would have spent $200,000 to make a movie about his dad and invited 500 of his closest friends to the DIA and thrown a big, big bash? The movie will never be seen again because, Bill Davidson wasn't that type of an international figure. David Stern was great in the movie and a lot of Pistons were there. I guess they must have been in town for the Bad Boys celebration.
The reunion.
Yeah, for the reunion. So it just struck me how it would have been nice to have a billionaire dad and be able to just
travel the world. Movie. A guy who was left $1 billion out of his father's
will. That's right.
Who makes the movie.
Biggest rise I ever saw from Bill Davidson, you say he was a quiet man. In the Silverdome many years ago, was standing outside the locker room just after a game ended. And here comes Jay Mariotti. I think some people know who that is. Mm-hmm. A very controversial sports columnist out of Chicago. He's working in Detroit. So Jay comes toward the locker room. And Davidson suddenly rises up. He points his finger at him and screams, "You're Dick Vitale's whore! "You're Dick Vitale's whore."
Jesus.
I said. And I turned to him. I said, "Bill, what are you talking about? That's real classic, you know." He wasn't quite the complete quiet guy that you think he was. And Denny,
who?
Asking
Bill Davidson.
Bill Davidson is screaming that?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Jay Mariotti. And you're asking, and I know it's tongue-in-cheek with Eli if he got a royalty check. There was on the Magic Johnson, Greg Kelsner, Michigan State teams, State had this little cheerleader, very cute little girl named Kathy Lilly, who later became a friend of mine in New York City.
Oh, where's this?
So they're producing, listen to this. So they're producing this documentary about the Michigan State team, right? And there's the shot where she's over with the cheerleaders and she leads some quick cheer, and it lasted about a second and a half on the air. They get a number on Kathy. They call her into the office, one of the agencies in New York, and says, "Well, you know, you're in this and we got to pay you because you did appear in it." And she's sitting there like, "What?" She doesn't say anything. Guy says, "So we're going to, you know, give you a check for $500. Kathy's thinking, $500? She doesn't say a word. Guy says, "Okay, we'll make $1,500 then." Kathy still doesn't say a word. And the guy says, "Okay, we're going to give you $1,500 and you get a SAG card, Screen Actors Guild, for the rest of your life." So she says, "Okay." And so you need to get something out of this. And Kathy Lilly would take me to the Screen Actors Guild Theater. You guys know it. Or Eli, you do, on 57th Street, the DGA Theater on 57th Street in Manhattan. Because they always had these free movie screenings. Susie, "Bob, you want to go Tuesday afternoon? I got this free," because she's a SAG member for life. You should be too, Eli.
I am. Also,
you're already an AFTRA member.
Actually, it's SAG after now. I still pay my
dues.
Yes,
it is.
Anyway, let's get into baseball in a second. But first, I want to tell you that 3 years running this decade, the prestigious Consumers Research Council has named Dr. Yaldo among America's leading LASIK surgeons. He's also the only one in Southeast Michigan with the CAT system.
God, I was wondering where he was rated.
The most advanced in the world, where most people get better than 20/20 vision. All you really need is 20/20, but to get dialed into 20/15 is just amazing. Now, LASIK isn't for everybody. It's great for distance vision and getting rid of the annoyance of contacts and glasses, but if you're pushing 50, you're still likely suffering with reading issues, and that's where multifocal lens implants come along to save the day by giving you precise up-close and distance vision for the rest of your life. Denny, you see it. I got 9-point type. I have no problem seeing it.
None whatsoever.
Not at all. Not at all. So end the annoyance of poor...
Your fingers stay on the characters.
With my little magnifying glass, though. Right. End the annoyance of poor vision and your dependence on glasses, contacts, or reading glasses. Get a free evaluation and get the no-filter discount that Dr. Yaldo will have the answer for you. Call 1-800-398-EYES, 1-800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Get it done. Enjoy the best summer and best vision of your life. Bob?
And we want to give you another phone number right now, folks. As usual, if you'd like to get in touch with us, leave a message for us. The phone number to call is 760-89-BALLS. Yes, 760-89-BALLS. And if you want to send the show an email about anything you've heard or want to discuss, feel free to do that. The email address is asknofilter@gmail.com.
Now, one final note on the basketball. So I'm rooting for State. I like State. I mean, I've been a reporter. Unless they're playing Michigan, I root for the teams in our state. So I called my old college roommate, Don, who we were freshmen 50 years ago. And I said, "You know, I know you hate State, but since Michigan's out of it, who were you rooting for last night in the game?" And he said, "The enemy of my enemy is my friend. I hate Duke, but I was rooting for them almost like they were Michigan. I hate them so much." I go, "Is it still because Bert Smith voted against them in 1974 to go to the Rose Bowl?"
I'll tell you what it is. And you told the story before the show. I've told the same thing on the show. I've lived in New York for more than 30 years. The biggest Michigan State haters are primarily Jewish people from the New York area.
Oh, stop it.
No.
You're stereotyping BS.
Michigan
is ridiculous.
Has a huge attraction to Jewish Easterners.
What's that got to do with
and
Michigan?
And they go to Ann Arbor for 4 years, then they come right back to New York, and they hate Michigan State. And I know so many of them, and I tell them, "You know why you hate Michigan State? Because you were not one of us. You are not from Michigan. You were not one of us. We don't hate Michigan."
Oh, please.
That is so weird.
Well, I'm from New York.
Bob, go pet the dogs.
Yeah, come on, Bob. Come on, please.
Easy.
You and your stereotyping for a liberal like you, God.
And by the way, that's what we were talking about before the show started, too. And I asked Eli, the way I phrased that, I said, "Where's your friend from?" He goes, "Well, he's from Long Island." I said, "Oh, may I ask this question? Is your friend Jewish?" He says, "Well, yeah, he is." I said, stereotypes exist for a reason.
Please.
We got to be careful, but they exist for a reason.
All right. So the Tigers I'm watching the game yesterday, recorded it, because you can't watch a 3.5 hour game where nobody gets any hits. It's just...
Or runs.
You know, and I also looked up the average age of a fan who watches baseball on TV is what? Take a guess.
50.
Take a guess, Bob.
Average. I'm gonna go with Denny on that.
No, the average age of somebody watching Major League Baseball on television is 57. Back in 2016, it's up to 58 right now. NBA 42. NFL is 50. So baseball is a very aging population.
Are you forgetting one of the four major sports right there? Are you forgetting one of the
hockey,
four major sports?
Hockey.
Yes, hockey, the NHL.
49 years old.
Yeah, but they're all Canadians.
Yeah.
Oh, they are. Detroit is called Hockey Town. Minnesota is called
We have a lot
of
Canadians in the city of Detroit.
But a Canadian year is only worth 0.8 of a
Oh, is that all?
Yeah. There's an exchange rate. Anyway, so actually the PGA Tour is older, 64 years old. I'm thinking
that makes sense. Though, I'm like, money.
It's so great to be average because I'm so used to being older than country, that. But I'm like an average PGA watcher. That makes you feel great. Makes you feel young again.
But that's because of the country club thing. You got to have money to belong to these country clubs.
I know. So let me. I'm watching a lot of Tigers this weekend, and in the 39 innings that they played,
oh boy,
they only scored in 3 of them. I'm looking at the stadium, the Rogers Center.
Yeah.
There's nobody there.
No.
I'm saying,
I don't.
I'm saying this is like a team 30 games out playing a game in late August. Since it's indoors, there's no sunlight, so there's no sense that you're really, you know, watching a day game anyway.
By the way, Eli, it snowed in Toronto over the weekend. Just as I hear, it snowed in Detroit.
But
why you want to be indoors.
But after the opening day in most stadiums, it's not unusual to have no crowds at all for the next 5 or 10 ball games.
Did you watch the second game? I mean, it was unbelievable.
Oh, it was terrible.
Sounds to me like you guys, especially you, Denny, are looking at this 4-game series in Toronto and trying to knock the Tigers.
No, not at all.
They split, and they had four. Count them, four very well-pitched games for the Tigers.
Well,
four.
Bob, as I was saying to Denny beforehand, since they're playing against a rebuilding team that started a guy who's never played, has major league debut, maybe the rebuilding teams is about 35% of baseball. All play in their own league. So the Tigers are 2-2 against rebuilding teams. And I think the top rebuilding teams, like English soccer, should get to step up to the major leagues
next year, Bob?
Because you know, they're playing... Although the Yankees did lose 2 out of 3 to the Orioles.
They did.
But you're a rebuilding team.
You know, I bet Denny doesn't know what you meant by that. And I bet a lot of our listeners don't know what you meant. I've been talking about this for many years on the air and saying we should indeed. I agree with you. They have this system. Do you know, Denny, that in the English football Premier Division,
football.
The lowest three finishers are relegated. That's what they call it, relegated to the minor leagues the next year. And the top three clubs in the minor leagues move up to the Premier Division. So you could have a case where the Tigers might be playing in the American Association this year or the International League. And you might have a top team in the International League, maybe Buffalo or something, now playing in the major leagues.
Contrary to what you think, I had 4 children that all played soccer in school.
Okay.
And my one son, Timmy, who was a hell of an athlete, constantly drilled us about the rules of soccer. And so we knew all about that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Do I agree with it? Hell no, I don't agree with it. I like the concept, but you're going to see baseball add a number of teams quickly into the playoffs at the end of the year. You're going to see two or four more teams.
Year.
Won't do it this year, but within the next couple of years, you're going to have more teams in the playoffs.
I'd hate to see that.
Because the owners want to make more money because the guys that aren't in the playoffs are making nothing, zero.
Only the NFL and Major League Baseball have any sincerity when it comes to playoff teams.
I agree.
Because they're just bloated. Oh, do we have a question here? Oh, okay.
A good question, too.
Oh, my God. You know, this show is old enough. The first one is, do you have any good Joe DiMaggio stories? No! No, we don't!
Who's Joe DiMaggio?
I don't know who Joe DiMaggio... I'll tell you what I do.
When I was at Channel 7 in Detroit in the late 70s, he was doing that national Mr. Coffee tour.
Yeah.
And so they would bring him around to be interviewed. And I interviewed Joe DiMaggio. And I will never forget the icy stare. He was
terrible.
Not a nice guy to
Horrible.
Begin with.
I'm going to tell you a story because this is a no-filter show.
Go ahead.
when I joined Oakland, you know, he was a big promoter in the San Francisco. He lived there. Right. He had a big restaurant and everything.
Grew up in San Francisco, yes.
Absolutely. And he would come over once in a while and visit with the Oakland. When we were on strike, Joe came over to play in a charity golf tournament for underprivileged kids.
Okay.
Big tournament. I mean, all the ball players were a part of it. The football team was a part of it. The anybody who was anybody was in this tournament. It took 4 days to play this ding-dang thing. And while we were on strike, so we didn't have any restrictions. So the bottom line was, I'm playing with him, DiMaggio. I'm playing with Kenny Hubbs, and I'm playing with Brent Allier.
Wow, the great, the late Kenny Hubbs. Wow, yeah.
No, not Kenny Hubbs. I didn't say Kenny Hubbs.
You said Kenny Hubbs.
No.
Hey, you did.
I said...
You said Kenny Hubbs.
Did I say Kenny Hubbs?
You meant Kenny Holtzman, you meant.
Kenny Holtzman.
Kenny Holtzman. There we go. Okay.
So, Kenny, good friend. Anyway, another, Bob, before you say it, he's
Jewish. Yes, Bob. He's Jewish. I don't think he's from New York, but
he's left-handed.
Don't want to make any stereotypes about.
And he's from St. Louis.
About guys from Oakland that play, or that are Jewish.
He's the only Jewish guy.
Michigan State. Does he blindly hate Michigan State?
He's the only guy in the world from St. Louis who's Jewish. Anyway.
Okay, keep going.
So we get into golf. We play nine holes. We're walking, no golf carts. On this golf, it had rained that morning, so the players of all things were told to walk. Can you imagine Joe DiMaggio having to walk on this golf course? Anyway, we're walking and coming up the ninth hole, and there's a monstrous crowd, but it's mostly kids, young kids in wheelchairs.
He blew off kids in wheelchairs.
So here
please.
We go. We're on the 10th tee, and this boy is standing there with his mother and his grandmother, and God help me, strike me dead right now.
Be careful, you're 75 years old.
Yeah, that's
it might
right.
happen.
The kid, Mr. DiMaggio, can you please sign my autograph for me? Because Joe hadn't signed an autograph all day. And Joe said, I'm too busy. See me tomorrow. I might be back.
Oh, God.
I'll never forget that as long as
DiMaggio's.
Yeah, I heard he's really a prick.
He was nasty. Well, let me finish. He was nasty. I grabbed him as we're walking down the 10th fairway. I said, why can't you just sign one autograph, get one good picture? I said, everybody's taking pictures of you out here being a jerk off. He said, I'm Joe DiMaggio. I don't have to sign anything I don't want to sign. I said, Joe, you're right, and you can play in this foursome by yourself if you can.
Jeez.
Oh, God. Yeah, because it shows everybody up.
That's a good story.
Now, and I think there was a book. I didn't read it talking about
it. I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah.
I can't remember the author's name.
Saying what a total prick he was.
Oh,
my God. This is a real tell-all about the life of Joe DiMaggio, post-baseball especially. And if you're really interested in this, any of you people hearing us discussing DiMaggio, you got to read this. Some of this stuff is hard to believe.
Yeah,
when I was a young reporter in my 20s, there were only two people who ever intimidated me. They were so scary. They were so intense. Joe DiMaggio and Ira Parseghian. Now, Ira, of course, turned out to be one of the greatest guys in the world when he got older and mellowed, but DiMaggio never did.
No, Joe went out with his boots up, and he was going to hurt anybody who got in his way. When he was dying, he wanted to be left alone.
The greatest guy besides Muhammad Ali that I interviewed was Hank Aaron. What a thrill to meet Hank Aaron.
Nice man. He's a nice man.
He was coming through with the Brewers. I think it might have been 76.
Yeah, sure.
His last year. And so I was on WJZZ at the time, and I was so excited because I had this little cassette machine, and I was doing interviews. And if I went to the ballpark and had a press pass and was on the field, they would have to talk to me. And I said, tomorrow I'm going to give you an interview with Hank Aaron. I'm going to see him tonight at the ballpark. I was so excited. So I get there early. And there's nobody there. He's sitting in the dugout with Bob Uecker telling stories.
My goodness.
So I'm being polite. I'm waiting. I'm waiting there, kind of lurking. They notice me, but I'm young, I'm nervous, and I'm so excited because nobody else is around. I get to Hank Aaron. So he eventually gets up, and I say, Mr. Aaron, can I have a few words? And he goes, not right now. I'll get you later. I go, oh, no. So I'm looking around, and all the report. Turns out, I didn't realize the way it works, and Bob, you'll understand. By the time all the reporters showed up and he was getting ready to hit and they were all there, he interviewed everybody at once.
Right.
So I did get Hank Aaron, but I was terrified that he was going to blow me off and I would look. But
Hank normally was pretty accommodating.
Yeah,
you know,
he was.
I played with him for about three quarters of a year in Atlanta, and he was always accommodating to most guys, especially the Atlanta media. And then he got a divorce and he married the anchor down there. And,
and Hank
became a different kind of person after that, too. He
wasn't the nice,
meek, and mild, wonderful, gregarious type of guy. I don't know what happened with the.
She gave him a little edge.
She wanted to give him a position in the community that he could be a spokesman for anything that was going on.
And he did. And
he did a good job for a while.
Yep. a question here.
I was going to say that same series, Eli. You're talking about the Milwaukee Brewers in the mid-70s. Yeah. My daughter, Kelly, whom you know very well, her whole life, was about 6 years old at the time. I said to Kelly, I said, hey, we're going out tonight. Oh, good, Daddy. Where are we going to go? I said, I'm going to take you down to the ballpark to see Hank Aaron. It's Hank Aaron. Who's that, Daddy? So she got her little boyfriend from next door. I got three tickets to sit in the stands. I think the two little kids. And I told them way down. My grandmother told me that she saw Babe Ruth play in New York. That was, I couldn't believe it. I want you to say, when you get to be in your 70s or 80s, that you saw Hank Aaron. And now she can say that. She's never forgotten.
And I played with him. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well.
And I'll tell you, it's ironic we're talking about Hank. We just traded about 2 weeks ago at a show in New York for a Hank Aaron autograph bat. A game-used autograph bat. Ooh. Yeah, so it's got some value.
Quickie question here. This is kind of interesting by Pavel. Paul is his English version of that. He goes, do you think Izzo's in-your-face coaching style is going to now really be under the spotlight nationally that they're in the Final Four?
I hope
already
not.
Done that, and yep. Denny said it first, and both of us wholeheartedly agreed. Tom Izzo, ladies and gentlemen, has gotten religion. The national outcry over what he did recently. He's gotten religion. You're never going to see that again.
I agree.
But you know what?
And the story's been played out.
What was going on last night? I don't know if you saw it, but in the huddle towards the end of the game, I don't know if it was end of the game or in the middle of the game, something was going on because he got up to kind of move towards a player and somebody grabbed him. I don't know.
Really?
What was going on? Anybody see that?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I think what was happening was with Dwayne Stevens. You saw him, Tom, kneeling, his assistant coach.
Right.
And Dwayne was standing right there. And Izzo looked up at him, and all he did is he pointed at him to shush him like this.
That's what it was. Okay.
Shushing him. And then Dwayne Stevens said something else, and Tom talked back to him. But that wasn't an incident. That just was a normal.
I thought it was going to be a replay of what we had seen a couple nights earlier. That's all. It looked like it at first.
Any other comments on the Tigers? Should we move on? They're going to see Tyson Ross tonight.
They're playing the Yankees. They had four straight, really well-pitched games. Now, Monday night, as we tape this show Monday morning, they're going into New York to play the Yankees for three.
Right.
The Yankee club that lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore
the worst team.
Over the weekend.
Right.
And the New York papers today are killing the Yankees. And they're especially killing, the Yankees catcher. It was one of the Gary Sanchez.
Yeah.
He's one of the worst defensive catchers in all of baseball. He made a couple throwing errors over the weekend. Going to be interesting. Now, I talked about our late president of the United States, Franklin Pierce, here on the program, didn't I? Until Eli fortunately corrected me.
Our 14th president, yes.
Yeah. And so I was talking about Franklin Perez. Thank you for correcting me again. This guy is now, did you see this?
No.
Franklin Perez is now out 4 to 6 with shoulder tendonitis.
Oh.
Now, he was KO'd at the start of spring training this year with another injury. And as you know, he missed most of 2018 because of, guess what? Shoulder problems.
Mm.
So you talk about making these trades. This was the key guy in the deal for JV with Houston. And I don't know what's going to happen with this guy, if he's injury prone or what.
Well, this is interesting.
There's a lot of stuff.
Because you had on your list, Denny, the Hugh Darvish.
Hugh
Darvish.
Right.
And this is – so Tyson Ross, by the way, is going to pitch today. He's a former All-Star. I don't know what his full story is, but, so he's had some success. But the Tigers are getting guys like Tyson Ross and Matt Moore and
Spencer Turnbull. Who looks great on Sunday, by the way.
Huh?
Matt Moore, amazing.
Yeah. But these are guys that you can get for 1 year at a reasonable price because they have something and they've had some success, but they've also had some injuries or whatever.
But you don't win with them.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You don't win with
it. It depends. You can plug guys into the fourth or fifth spot in a rotation.
You can't plug them in very often.
With a contender, you can plug them in as the fourth. You can't make them a number one with the Tigers.
From time to time.
I agree.
Yeah. But never on an every fifth day basis or sixth day, whatever it might be.
So this is the reason why they don't give pitchers long-term contracts if they can avoid it.
Darvish opens up the other night. He walks 7 guys in 2 2/3 innings. He lost 8-6. And now he had an elbow surgery, of course. It came off the Tommy John stuff.
Right.
And the first 10 hitters, 6 walked and 4 struck out. So nobody touched the ball in play. Nobody hit a ball in play the first 10 hitters.
Sorry, quick story because it may not come up again. Denny and I were interviewing Mickey Mantle back in 1991.
Oh, I love this story.
And Mickey Mantle kept on asking us if we wanted a drink. Now, he died in 95.
This was probably Mickey drink?
This is probably three years previous to that. It was the middle of the afternoon. I had to go back on the air. If I hadn't, I would have gotten so drunk with Mickey Mantle, it would have been the thrill of my life. Yep. But anyway.
Here's a guy. No, it wouldn't have been. Here's a guy who told me, and you're not one of us, Danny. You're not a child of the 60s. This is the hour. This guy once smoked dope with George Carlin before a show. Yeah. I said, wow, that's amazing. Really? That's so cool.
And he sold it to him.
Yeah. Now, so here we go again. This is my installment today.
I haven't finished the story, damn it.
I thought you were done. I'm sorry.
No, the along the lines of what he said with
great
the
great story.
Along the lines with like the 10 benches. He goes, Denny, I was figuring out. I struck out 1,700 times. I went three full seasons without touching the ball.
But I'll tell you this. Something about
we did,
what,
we did 30 or 40 minutes with him, right?
Yeah, and I'm going to save three or four other stories from that day for another time, so it'll blow them all now.
The greatest thing about it, at times, he didn't even know who we were. And I'm the guy that give him the three.
No, it's time out. He loved you.
Oh, no,
he loved you.
Because of that incident with Denny Group, the pitch for him.
I think because he was Denny's idol as a kid. Denny idolized Mickey Mantle.
Yep, sure
and
did.
I think Mickey, you must have told him that.
Yep.
And what you did that day where you dished up the home run to him is something that had a deep impact on him. And he just really, I don't know what else went on with that, but he just was, he just couldn't have been nicer to
him. And I got a kiss on the lips before I left.
Yeah.
I don't want to, from Sharon, I hope.
That's when I left the room.
From Sharon, I hope your wife.
It was Mickey.
Oh, my God. All right. Can I tell this? Can I tell
go
this
ahead.
Damn,
go ahead.
Can I tell this damn Shep and Jack story for the weekend?
Go ahead. Oh, please
do. Anyway, they're during the broadcast, they start talking about the shift that all the major league teams are doing. And Jack, and it's the same as the three of us, we don't understand it. But for Christ's sake, deliberately hit the ball the other side. Jack doesn't get that either. So he says, you know, I tell kids and I tell coaches and managers all the time, hit them where they ain't. Matt Shepard goes, well, so who was the best you ever saw? Carew? Boggs? Gwynn? Jack says, yeah. And now, Brandon, this is for you at your tender age, 35. And Jack says also, among the best he ever saw, Brandon, who is John Walkenfuss?
Oh, my goodness.
Johnny Walkenfuss.
You want me to answer that question?
Brandon? No, no, no. He's asking Brandon.
No. I'm asking Brandon because he's
not going to know.
He's never heard of him.
I've never heard of John Walkenfuss.
You know why? They traded John Walkenfuss the year Brandon was born, 1984. How the hell is he supposed to know who John Walkenfuss is?
Because I could name a lot of Tigers from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. I'll tell you, pal, when I was a kid. Now, then, of course, there's no mention whatsoever.
Well, wait a minute. Walkenfuss. Tell him who he was.
John,
he was a catcher.
He was a catcher for the Tigers,
And he came up with Kansas City. Go ahead.
We understand. They're talking about John Walkenfuss. And there is no mention, not one, of not only the greatest player ever who hit him where they ain't, but the guy who initially said
Wee
that.
Willie Keeler.
You better believe it,
that's
buddy.
That's right.
Wee Willie Keeler. I don't think they've ever heard of him.
Did you meet him?
No, he died in 1930. Anyway, that's very funny. You know, I like Jack. I've always liked Jack. Even when Jack was a total jerk, I liked Jack. I always liked the jerks. I liked Gibby when he was a jerk, Lambert when he was a jerk, Jack. But I just don't know why the broadcast is so
boring,
lethargic. I don't want to say boring.
Yeah, it is.
It's got to be a combination of nobody in the stands in Toronto, early in the season, so we're not into the rhythm of baseball, maybe.
Right. They aren't.
And I'm just saying this is just really hard for me to watch for an extended period of time. I hope it picks up.
Well,
but I maybe it's just the pace of baseball takes a while to get used to, because in basketball they're running up and down the court, and hockey they're up and down, and football, you know, at least there's just.
You would think Jack could add an awful lot of things going on.
He is. I think he's given good insight.
Even when Kaline and Cal did the games, they had story after story.
It's true.
They talked about the situational baseball. They talked about all of that.
Yeah.
These guys never do that. I don't understand.
Well, Gibby does. I think Gibby does.
From time to time. And Gibby would know. He was a field manager. He had all of that going for him. And I don't know what he's doing. He just does the home games, right?
You guys may think it's boring, but I got Jack and Shepard and Gibby and Shepard stories to tell every day. It's hysterical. You never know what they're going to do.
No, I agree with you.
I enjoy that.
We agree. We totally agree. But they're always now, unrelated to the game.
Now, fellas, I don't know if you saw this on ESPN's website. April 1st, 1972.
Yes.
It's a very important day in baseball history.
He just referred to it.
You
just referred to it. That's when they went out on strike,
okay, there
right?
You go.
Yeah,
so now here we are.
You're with the A's.
April 1st, 2019, 47 years later. Right. And over the weekend, we saw a story from former Tiger Tony Clark, who's now the head of the Players Association, saying he's ready to go out on strike because he doesn't like the revenue split with the owners. The owners are trying to take advantage of him. And they quoted in the article I read one unnamed Major League Baseball player who said, I'm ready to strike right now.
Yeah, because the guy's making $40 million a year. That's BS. And if they go out on strike again, this union should get a brand new representative, and we need somebody else to go back into that office and run it the way it's supposed to be run. We're supposed to make money with our union.
Very interesting that you would say that, because you were, you know, back when the union...
And I was one of the reps.
Right, right. And your era, had Marvin Miller been along 10 years earlier, or society had moved in that direction, you would have made a lot more money than the measly couple hundred grand you played to play the game for 10 years.
Exactly. And let me say this to you. All we were asking for in 72 was a 4% cost of increase in living allowance. That's all we asked for, and we wound up with today. This is exactly what's happened.
Right. 4 years later.
But if they go out on strike, it'll be the biggest mistake. They made one the last time, and nobody came to the park. This time, and the word greed will be on every newspaper in the country. Yeah. The good news is nobody reads the newspaper anymore.
I'll tell you, I will tell you this story about that, Denny, after the last baseball strike that actually canceled a World Series, a sin.
Oh, that was awful.
So unforgivable. Yep. It's amazing people ever came back to baseball.
Yeah.
So right after they came
listen,
back.
Listen, thank God for the steroids, because the game could not have come back without steroids.
There's some truth to that. No question.
Absolutely.
So anyway, this is right after they had come back, start of the next season. It's a gorgeous day in New York. Beautiful spring day. Tigers are in town.
You want 1973 now?
Yankees in the series. This was the series was canceled in 94.
Okay,
right?
Okay, you're up to that. Okay.
So this was 95.
Okay.
So now the Tigers are in town. So that's good. Everybody's going to be here. I'll get to say hello. So I go down to the Tigers broadcast booth just to say hello to Kellen Kaline. And I walk in during the game, and a break. George Kell turns to me and says, Bob, you will never see another baseball strike in your lifetime. Why? Because on a beautiful day with the Detroit Tigers at Yankee Stadium, there are about 6,000 people rattling around the stands.
Jeez.
And now look where we are. Now look where we are again, apparently.
I just don't think it'll happen. What's going on here is Buster Olney, the guy that's the union chief
The writer.
No, he's a writer. He's a writer.
He's screaming about the efficiency in arbitration. And what apparently the owners have is some kind of a trophy that goes to the people who are the most efficient for awarding the least
the
money.
The clubs, right.
The clubs.
I read
the clubs.
That and couldn't believe it.
The one you told me about how Al Avila is going to give a free club.
I told you that the other day.
That's amazing. Yeah. I can't even believe that.
Yeah.
Did we talk about that on the show or not?
No, we have not. That's where Al Avila went to the writers and said, anybody who really writes favorably in one form or another about the Detroit Tigers, we're going to let him eat with the players after the ballgame.
No, he said the best beat writer.
Fellas, I read that writer, and I thought to myself, you know what? I can just see Al saying that in a joking
It's got to be a joke.
It's a joke.
No self-respecting beat writer would want to win that. That's exactly the thing you don't want to win.
Would that writer actually go into the clubhouse?
No, I'm saying
I don't think so. Yeah,
so maybe it was a joke. I hope
speaking of winning.
But I'll tell you, wait a second.
Will you stop
Avila, remember, this is the same guy that said on a Friday, he said, this is one of the worst clubs we had. You're going to have to wait 3, 4, 5 years. And on a Monday, he said, this is one of the best clubs I've seen.
That's happen quick.
Training. My God, you talk about performance.
Speaking of winning, as Eli was before he was so rudely interrupted. Talk about five straight victories, and I don't mean the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yes.
They're making an amazing surge. The Wings have now won five straight games.
Wow.
And they're looking great. And the former Michigan State star, Anson Carter, who was on the NBC NHL show Sunday night, was saying, watch out for the Detroit Red Wings. The future is very bright in Detroit. I've been telling you guys here for how long that when the light goes on with Anthony Mantha, as it must at some point, he's going to be a monster. Five-point night. Mm-hmm. They beat the Boston Bruins in Detroit, 5-point night, including his first hat trick. And you look at what's going on with this club. Now they've got a good Michigan boy, Luke Witkowski. And one of the players the Bruins took exception to, a totally legal hit, he actually wants to fight Luke Witkowski. Witkowski just kicked the hell out of him. Speaking of Michigan State, Taro Hirose, This kid was playing for Michigan State just a month ago, and he led the entire country in scoring. The Wings signed him like they did Danny DeKeyser, just as a free agent. He gets at least an assist in all five of his first games. He got his first NHL goal last night. And if you want to see the future of the Detroit Red Wings encapsulized, look at the first line and the first goal last night. Bob, where Tyler Bertuzzi – I'm sorry, man. I'm talking about
okay,
this.
Listen, listen, yeah, Bob, we understand
that. I just have to wake Denny up. I just have to nudge Denny. Denny had nodded off at the Michigan State line.
Sure he has. Everybody else, and that's too bad because it already nodded off during his 9-minute Hank Aaron story a little while ago. People care.
I don't think so about
hockey in Hockey Town. People who are listening in Michigan and New York and wherever else they're listening.
Nobody has ever denied that people care about the Red Wings in the city of Detroit. No question about it. I only wish that feeling ran across the country. Wouldn't that be nice?
You're right about that.
It isn't baseball. It's not football. It's not basketball. Quit trying to make it one of those sports.
We have four major sports.
But it's Detroit, though. It's Detroit. It's a little bit different. A little different here.
And listen, one thing about the playoffs, I love watching the hockey playoffs. It's great. Just like college basketball.
There's a lot of
you get me interested when the playoffs start.
There's a lot of sports I like we don't talk about. We don't talk about tennis. We don't talk about boxing. We don't talk about MMA, which I watch, believe it or not.
How weird is this that you're saying this? I got it right here in my notes, and we're going to talk about something else right now that we don't talk about, and we should. Denny McClain, I think some people know this, at one time in his life, was one hell of a golfer. And I've seen Eli Zarrett play golf, too, and he's not bad either.
Yeah,
with a lot of practice, he could be better than he is. We had a situation here over the weekend. Where Tiger's playing in this match play event down in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, we had talked
misses,
about this.
He chokes on a 4-foot putt on the 18th hole.
You're right. However, before that, he choked on his chip shot from 52 yards and he left 15 yards short.
Then
that's
he loses to Lucas Bjerregaard.
That's okay.
Tiger Woods lost at this guy. So when we look ahead to the Masters just a week from now.
Yep.
And everybody said, well, can Tiger win another major? You guys know more about golf than I do. Is Tiger Woods ever going to win another major, and how do you think he'll do with the Masters?
I think he's become a representative top 15 golfer is what he is. He could win the Masters if things go right because there's a lot that goes into it. I
find it tough. You know why? Because there's so many good young
players.
And
he's also 44. The oldest Masters winner was 46, Jack Nicklaus. Right. I think he could. But, yeah, Bob, he seems to implode in way as much as he looked like the old Tiger for much of it, he does things that he never would have done 10 years ago.
Right.
So my guess is that he wouldn't win another major because the old Tiger never would have left a 52-yard pitch in such an important situation, 15 yards short. And I'm telling you, not that I can tell on TV. I'm saying to the screen, he's aiming left. He's aiming left of the hole. It's a straight putt, and he missed it left of the hole. So I don't know.
And then you know what? There was a period of time, Bobby, that I don't – for like 7, 8, 10 years, I don't think Tiger ever missed a green. I don't think he ever hit the ball left or right.
It was magic.
The guy was unbelievable.
It was never magic.
Putt, yeah.
And everybody tuned in. I don't care if you were a golfing fan or not. Everybody watched on Saturdays and Sundays to see him play.
Absolutely. He's bigger than golf.
One of the biggest shocks of my lifetime in sports has been that Tiger Woods won 14 majors, and that was it. This was the guy who was going to win.
Yeah.
Jack won 18, as everybody knows. This is a guy who was so going to smash Jack's record. He's going to completely rewrite golf's record book, and then all this problem happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Tiger, you can't say he's a better player than Jack. May have more talent. You can't say he's better than Jack. He didn't defeat him in terms of majors won.
I think if you take the quality of the competition for a 10-year stretch, Tiger Woods, or 15-year stretch, Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer of all time, better than Nicklaus.
Yeah.
But in the overall, you know, the big global look. But anyway, the moment.
No, but look, I want to continue on with this just real quickly here. What would you say about a guy who won 20 majors? 20 majors. What would you say about that guy?
Sensational.
What can you say about a guy who's 37 years old and just won the 101st title of his career down here in South Florida?
Roger Federer.
It's his second event. It's his second event that he's won on the tour this year.
Right.
He is 18-2. He's won 20 all-time Grand Slam events. Roger Federer's career is still going up. Tiger's career, and they were close buddies, you know that. Tiger's career going down.
Well,
so how about some kudos for
Tiger's
Roger Federer?
Two things interrupted Tiger in the way to 18, injuries and the thing with his wife.
Right.
That completely blew apart his whole
– He lost his concentration.
Yeah, and that cost him a couple of years, and
And one day I'll tell you. One day I'll tell you about concentration, because that's exactly what happened to me after I was suspended at 24, 25 years old. I lost my concentration. I didn't know where I was for 2 years.
Not only that, but
and don't forget one other thing about Tiger is that he was constantly messing around with his swing. He got a new swing coach every 2 or 3 months.
They all do that.
And ironically, what happened was people said that he had to change his swing, because the torque from his original swing would mess up his knees and shorten his career. What happened to his career anyway?
Yeah, well,
he became a great player. And since you're not a golfer, you may not understand part of this. He was, when he first got out on a tour, he was a right-to-left player. He eventually became what all of the great players become, a left-to-right player. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable how good he was. Yep. I just never saw anything like it.
The moment of the WGC match play of the weekend, it again.
And by the way, one second. One other thought about tennis. Tennis, we don't have any more McEnroes, Jimmy Connors. We don't have any more of those guys.
Right.
The game has lost its personality. I don't know when it's
Agassi.
Coming back.
Agassi.
The screaming, the hollering,
Breaking
rackets.
Nove's got a lot of personality.
Nove's got a lot of personality.
Yeah.
I mean, by the way, Nove, I think, was hurt and didn't play the Miami event, which may be why Federer won it. Still.
The moment of the weekend for me, though, was when Sergio Garcia is playing Matt Kuchar in match play. And Sergio is one hole down on the seventh hole. He's got about a 12-foot birdie putt that will tie the match. Kuchar's already in for par. Sergio leaves it about 3 inches to the left of the hole. And he's
3 inches?
3 inches, at the most. Goes over and taps it in and misses, and thus loses the hole. Now, Kuchar was on the far side of the green and could have said to concede the putt. He had no chance because Sergio went right up there and hit it. And so then Sergio asked him to concede the next hole, and Kuchar wouldn't do it to even it off. But, you know, because Kuchar asked the official, can I call this a tie because I would have given it to him because it was an easy – I would have certainly given it when I was too far away. And he said, no, you can't do it at this stage. We would have had to concede the next hole. And at that point, he drew the line.
Your moment of the weekend. My moment of the weekend was Saturday night in New York City with the legendary, bound for Springfield in the Basketball Hall of Fame, Emmanuel Mudiay of the Knicks, came up to Dwayne Wade. They're playing Miami that night after the game. You know, this is Wade's swan song. So he's swapping uniforms with Steph Curry and Durant was out there. Emmanuel Mudiay comes and says, oh, man, let's swap uniforms, Dwayne. I don't think so.
And my moment of the weekend was Zion going over the steel, going a foot. It looked like he was over the rim by a foot. It was one of the great performances, and that particular moment was a great, great moment in the world of college basketball.
You know, Tillman and Goins, according to Jim Nance, are big boys. Next to Zion, they look relatively thin.
They look like thin children, high schoolers.
You can't argue this, although you can pick either one you want. The two greatest college basketball players who ever lived are Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton. Now, you can pick either one you want. That's fine.
I agree.
You go down, you start looking at the other two greats of the game. Kobe didn't play college ball.
LeBron
didn't play college ball. This kid is the most dynamic, amazing player I've ever seen. As we all know, Dean Smith did such a great defensive job guarding Michael Jordan. Dean Smith, the Carolina coach, was the only one that could stop Michael Jordan, and he did. This guy's astounding, Zion Williamson.
If you had to pick one basketball player to form in the history of the game, if we can all come up with somebody, in the history of the game, what one player would you pick to build a team around? Chamberlain.
I would.
Former Louis Alcindor out of Power Memorial.
Oh, that's a good one, too. The only reason I take Chamberlain is because he was a monster. He was as high as he was wide.
I know. I'd like Chamberlain. Anyway, okay. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We're out of time. We'll see you. We'll record on Thursday morning, coming up April, whatever it is, 3rd or 4th, and we'll see you all then.
Thank you.
Bye, buddy.
Bye-bye.